Good evening. My name's Garland Nixon, and you are listening to News Views here on WPFW 89.3 FM. I'm on every Friday, 6 p.m., here with my cohort, Mark Levine. And we have a special guest today. We've got, I don't know what to call you, Professor Christopher Chambers. Which title to use today, tonight?
Professor's fine.
Okay, Professor Chambers. He is a journalist professor at Georgetown University, also a lawyer, and specializing in, I don't know if you're practicing or not, but...
No, I gave that racket up a long time ago.
Good move. Well, it's funny because I'm going to be here with you and Mark, and you're a lawyer and a journalist. He's a lawyer and an economist, and neither one of you are practicing.
Right. Somewhere we lost our way down the line, but I think we made the right decision to get away from that.
Yeah.
There's only one thing less crazy than being a journalist, and that's a lawyer.
Well, we're gonna have a great conversation today. We're gonna be talking about the media. I'm sure you're gonna, with all the fiscal cliff stuff going on, and my gosh, Newtown,
yeah,
and all the other things are going on. And I'm sure, if the media is as I normally know it, they'll ignore all of that and have a story on, Lindsay Lohan or something.
Oh yeah, they probably got it in the pipeline right now.
Yeah, at the top of the list,
right?
Priority number one.
Right.
Lindsay Lohan just broke a nail.
Right.
So, but we're gonna take some calls too. Also at 202-588-0890. Not quite yet. Here in about 20 minutes or so, we're going to take some calls to talk about the media. But Chris, tell us, before we get started, tell us a little bit about your background and how you went from law books to journalism.
Well, I moved down to Charlotte, where Spencer was born. My cohort, age 13, my Robin to I'm Batman. Mm-hmm. And when I was down there, the online portion of the Charlotte Observer was just getting started.
Mm-hmm.
And they needed a lawyer, a legal reporter, for the web. This is in the days before the websites had actually surpassed and eaten up the print paper. But they were covering they need somebody to cover the Ray Caruth trial, the Carolina Panther.
They killed his
receiver,
girlfriend.
His girlfriend, and the son is now, was profoundly brain damaged. And basically, that's how I got my start in there, is being a legal reporter for this fledgling online portion of the Charlotte Observer, and I just never looked back from there. And I was lucky enough, when I came back to D.C. to hook up with an old professor of mine from when I was an undergrad, who had just happened to be the provost at Georgetown University. So it pays to have friends at the top. And he said, come and join the faculty. We're trying to put a communications faculty together, and that was 2007. And I've been, plugging away ever since. I mean, I'm not a superstar like Professor Dyson is, but I try to keep a low profile, so that's not a bad thing.
Once again, you're listening to 89.3 FM WPFW. This is News Views here with Garland Nixon, and I'm here with my cohort,
Mark Levine
and
Chris Chambers.
And as I was saying, Mark, I've got two lawyers, I've got an economist and a journalist.
Right.
And there's only two people sitting here.
You're surrounded.
I'm surrounded with two. But we're talking about the media, and we're gonna take some calls today. So be prepared.
I think we are journalists too, Garland. I mean, I left as a congressional lawyer back in '03, and I've done radio ever since. So I think I've broken some stories. I consider myself a journalist. There's all kinds of journalists.
As long as you're trying to find the information, put it in a digestible form for people and put it out there. I mean, there is some, there's got to be some professionalism involved in that. I mean, because, who's a blogger and who's a journalist. But once you've crossed that professional line, doesn't matter what medium you're in, you are a journalist.
A journalist is somebody who seeks to find out the truth, particularly a truth that's not readily apparent to others.
Exactly.
And to let the world know about it. That's what a good journalist does.
That would throw Bill O'Reilly right out of it. Now, speaking of which, I'm going to throw this, you guys are my esteemed panel today, so I'm going to throw questions out to my esteemed panel. Number one, let's start off with this. There's a term that's used, the quote, the media, the liberal media, the mm-hmm. right-wing media, the this media, the that media. And what I always found interesting, and I guess, I've been here, doing it myself, and that is I'll turn on the media, and I'll see what's obviously a cable news station, and I'll hear somebody talking about something and saying it's not reported in the media. And I'm thinking to myself, aren't they just reporting it? A pundit on a cable news station, right, which I think is the media. So tell me, when you hear the term the media, people use it for their own purposes. Let's start with you, Chris.
Well,
what is, quote, in America today, the media?
It's whatever, you know, the average jerk says it is. That's what it's degenerated to. A lot, you know, as recently, even 30 years ago, it was what they call the legacy or traditional newspapers, mm-hmm, and magazines, and the three networks, and then maybe CNN.
Cronkite, stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, exactly. Now, and then radio was, you know, everything from, you know, Pacifica, mm-hmm, to NPR to the commercial stations that the conglomerates that owned, and even back then, local stations that were independently owned by local people. Well, all that's out the window now. It's basically, it is whatever you want to say it is. It's what pundits who have a point of view or have some agenda to push say it is. It's not, you know, because if you want to be inclusive, it could be everything. It could be, you know, digital social media. It could be the three networks. It could be the cable giants. It could be digital magazines. There's so many things now that is the media, but in our common parlance, it's whatever when we want to get something off our chest, complain, attack a group, an out group that we don't like. We attach that word the media to it. I mean, and so it's really lost all of its traditional meaning, and that's really sad.
Mark, the media is, let me throw this to you. The media now, there's kind of like what I would consider like a high road and a low road. You know, the high road of the media being the traditional, you know, whether it's newspapers, online newspapers, etc., and a low road being, you know, social media, and any schmuck like me or anybody else who decides they want a blog and name it, you know, something, you know, .com. Do you think that adding this low road has benefited, or do you think it's kind of polluted the media?
I think there's always been a high road and a low road. You can look back to the 1800s in the British media, mm-hmm, and you'll find, you know, that the Times, London Times, and then you'll find the stuff that they sold on the streets that was worse, I think, than our National Enquirer today.
It was porn.
It was everything. I also think it's funny that we always say the media is this, the media is that.
Right.
I do it too. We use a singular verb. Media is a plural word. It means mediums. It's plural.
Right.
We never ever say the media are, but really there is no the media. I mean, I think that's the point Chris was making. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of media. I think when people use the media, they often are referring to the mainstream media, or what Sarah Palin likes to call the lamestream media.
Right.
But basically, they're saying that there's a certain number.
The one that she doesn't read.
That's
she,
right.
She doesn't
right,
know
right.
what part of
exactly.
that she reads.
There's
right.
no question that when you say high and low, I really think there's two ways. One is the quality of what you get, mm-hmm, and the other is how ubiquitous it is. And there are still a few news sources that are high quality and ubiquitous. Meet the Press, the New York Times, the Washington Post. There are a few places where you could trust the source, or if they get it wrong, they're going to do their best to correct it. Something happens on Meet the Press, people are going to be talking about it, mm-hmm, afterwards. If something happens on John's blog, you know, you may, if it's funny, you might tweet it around a little bit, but it's not exactly the point, the stuff everybody's talking about.
The problem is that this mainstream media, we're talking about the networks or the cable giants, are funneling John's blog into their reporting.
Well, that's true.
In some stupid ways, sometimes.
Right. And sometimes it's stupid ways. I remember CNN decided, we're going to start following Twitter, and they just read random tweets that they think were funny or interesting.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I don't know who John 437 is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know that his stuff is right. To me, it actually took down CNN a peg in my mind, because a journalist should not just report what they think or hear. They should do some fact checking and make sure what they report is accurate. If they're giving an opinion, a good journalist, a good pundit, in my view, and I certainly consider myself a pundit, as you, Garland, a good pundit doesn't just give opinion, but gives opinion based on verified facts. That to me is the difference between a pundit and someone just shooting their mouth off. Anyone can have an opinion on anything, but a journalist pundit, which is, again, what I consider myself to be, is someone who finds the facts, verifies the facts, and then, yes, gives an opinion based on those facts. But when you throw the facts out the window, I mean, then you're not no different from John's tweet.
Chris, here's the other part, and I know you one of your areas of expertise and areas of focus is what is in the media and why. Now, there's one end of it Mark was talking about, and that is now CNN and some of the other mainstream media organizations kind of stooping to the lowest common denominator and just grabbing any schmuck off the internet and saying, look what this person said, or the latest viral video, you know, chocolate rain or whatever it is. Okay. But then there's the other end, and that is how much of the media is manipulated, because on one end that there's the low end, but on the other side they're owned by Comcast or Mick whoever. Or so what about the other end where you've got a media who for instance a cable station who may not be too thrilled about organized labor because their company they own doesn't like that. So what about that end of it?
Well, I mean, you have basically five companies owning basically everything you see, read, listen to. You know, from music to news product. I mean, these are basically items on a shelf in their own little grocery store. You know, so I mean, the book publishing company didn't used to be owned by the same company that makes movies.
Mm-hmm.
That also is owned by the same company that gives you your news.
And then look at a man like Rupert Murdoch, who owns everything.
Right.
He owns radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, the Wall Street Journal, Fox News. That's just in America.
Yeah,
he owns stuff worldwide. I mean, he's the single most powerful media magnate on Earth.
Or you can just look it's at like Viacom business like that, or Time Warner.
Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, these are companies that have interlocking boards of directors with the same people who brought you the fiscal crisis in 2007.
Right.
I mean, and in 2008. I mean, literally, these people are the same people on their boards. They get their money from these same people. The hedge fund managers and people like that and venture capitalists are the ones who fund them with their equity or their debt. I mean, they are part of the same club. So it's really kind of silly in a certain way, you know, when you go back into outer space and look down at Earth, these distinctions between, say, Fox News and, you know, Comcast, Universal, which owns NBC and MSNBC,
right,
are really, you know, Fox is really just flavoring their stuff with the right-wing raw meat so their product will be able to sell. But when you look, you know, and when we're in it as we are now, we do see the difference. And the differences are stark, and they do affect people. But if you were to jump off of planet Earth and go out into outer space and see the corporate ownership and how these stories are planted, how they're manipulated, where they move, there's really not a difference because they are basically the same sorts of animals. You know, whether it's Rupert Murdoch or whether it's Comcast Universal that owns MSNBC. I mean, you've got, you know, Sean Hannity or Rachel Maddow, they're just products.
Right.
You know,
right,
it's Jiffy peanut butter versus Peter Pan, if you look at it.
The other thing is, I don't think we should ever, people who don't do media, I think are unaware of the restrictions on freedoms of people that speak on media.
Other than here at WPFW, I might add.
I have been a pundit for 10 years now, which I guess shows my age. And I have been kicked off more media than I've been on.
Mm-hmm.
Right-wing media, left-wing media, for being on, I had a show on Iranian TV for all of 4 months till I started to allow criticism of the Iranian government, and boom, I mean, I've done all kinds of media. I've had people mad at me from the right and people mad at me from the left. And Pacifica is rare in that.
It really is.
It's not a corporate-owned media. But listen, Pacifica, obviously, it's got its own bias. And if you came on Pacifica and you were a Sean Hannity Republican, you wouldn't be on Pacifica. So that's not an insult on Pacifica. There's plenty of places for Sean Hannity Republicans to speak.
Like every other station, exactly.
So I'm not attacking Pacifica for that. But what I'm saying is that every station has its bias. And that's just where we are right now. The days of Walter Cronkite telling the objective news he can are over. Again, the New York Times, I think, tries to do that. Washington Post, CNN, in its best moments, tries to do that, but they're the exception now, not the rule.
The other part is this: that these the media is owned by various companies who have their own agenda. And what we've seen to some extent is this, a kind of picking sides. It's almost like people looked at Fox News and said, wait a minute, Fox News went all right wing and made a fortune. And kind of MSNBC, maybe I'm, you know, being overly suspicious. But as though MSNBC said, well, you know, if they're making a fortune on that side, let's move to the other side.
I think it's exactly
we'll
what
make
happened.
A fortune there. And
exactly
CNN sat in the middle and said, we're going to not try to really go too far in either
direction. And we're going to lose a fortune.
And
now.
They got
yeah, right,
crushed.
Right.
And so, what, you know, oftentimes what we see is people, you know, a nation of, what's the old saying, a nation of sheep begets a government of wolves.
Exactly.
You know, to some extent, Chris, are we getting what we ask for?
Oh, we get it all the time. I mean, I am talking about getting kicked off of media. I mean, even in my lectures at school, I mean, you know, it's that old comic strip stuff, Pogo. We've met the enemy and he is us.
Mm-hmm.
But people do not want to admit that. People rail against the, quote, media, unquote, but they want to see Real Housewives of Atlanta. They want, you know,
that's
they,
not media.
You know, that's not media, but I mean,
they're want, but
that's circuses.
But it is, but
that's
they're, the products are owned by the same company.
That's true.
Right. You know, so it's interchangeable as far as they're concerned. But we, you know, we don't want to engage in deep discussions about issues that are complex, that we need to do research about. We want the raw meat. We want the easy answers. I mean, that's across the board. And people just, you know, it's hard to look in the mirror and say, wow, you know, now the Newtown massacre of these children has forced people to go and look into the mirror, but that's a rare bird, believe it or not.
I'm not even so sure that's true. The NRA did not look into the mirror.
Well, I'm talking about the average
no,
people.
They shot the mirror.
And I don't think the right wing media looked into the mirror. There.
Right. Well, yeah.
That's true.
Some
they
people
fired into the mirror.
Some people.
But I mean, I'm talking about just the news. Product consuming public.
Yeah.
If you can really define that. I don't know if you can even do that. But I mean, you know, something like that does kind of focus people, but it's just for an instant.
Let me throw something out here if I could, just because as much as I've been criticizing, we've been criticizing, you know, punditry media on the left and on the right, you could actually be too objective too. And let me give you an example. I once did a paper in college on Joe McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
And what you had in the newspapers in that time was they'd have one column, Joe McCarthy says Owen Lattimore is a communist. And they'd have the other column, Owen Lattimore denies he is a communist. And instead of looking to see whether Owen Lattimore was a communist, he wasn't,
right.
What they do is they'd simply report both sides. And sometimes I have the problem with CNN saying, well, the Democrats say this, the Republicans say that.
Yeah.
They can't get together. We're going over the fiscal cliff without actually analyzing to see who's right and who's wrong. To me, the very best journalists are those that, yes, they show both sides, but they also, they don't take a stand, reporters, on which side is better policy, but they do take a stand when someone doesn't get the facts right. And that's why, you know, may he rest in peace, Walter Cronkite was really an incredible journalist, because not only did he try to take it down the middle, but when he saw that the government was intentionally lying to us, I mean, he was amazing that he actually came out and spoke against Vietnam.
Yeah, you don't have, because the other kinds of medium, a certain medium like online reporting, online magazines, and even in social media, because you have a lot of really incredible stuff going on now. That critical mass have been really, you know, checking facts, and nobody's checking anything. So then that will play that namby-pamby, let's say something like a Mother Jones, or
Salon.com.
You know, or the Atlantic actually looking at a scene what it does. We understand why MSNBC does what it does, but clearly your namby-pambyism. I mean, there's an article a guy Norman Orenstein was writing, who was a Republican, has been writing for 4 years that the problems in the federal government, the problems in public policy, is squarely on the shoulders of the right-wing Republicans, especially that wave that came in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody wants to say that because they don't want to, you know, stir the ire of the Breitbart zombies that are out there, or the Fox News people that are out there. They don't want to take that heat. And here's a Republican who's been reporting on this and doing the raw data, saying, look, why don't you report on this? And nobody's done that. And he's primarily been attacking CNN for stuff like that.
Well, something else I've heard more times than a few, Mark, from people who've criticized the media, and that's this. I have a friend who had written some books. I won't talk about him, but you probably know him. But he's up in New York, and he's written some very successful New York Times bestsellers. And he wrote a book about the stealing a few years ago about an election being stolen. Well, he'd been on all of the major and it was research documented evidence. It was not conjecture. He had everything he had in there was absolutely beyond a, you know, beyond a shadow of a doubt proven. He only put in the stuff in there that he can prove, but he gave his conjecture, but he had no, he had actual numbers and details and who did what where. So it was a great book. Well sourced. But when he put this book four, he had been on all of the major networks, and suddenly when he takes this book, which to some extent attacks the status quo, it attacks the system, for lack of a better term, none of them would touch it. On none of the sides, there's a feeling out there, Mark, that there is a system that the people who run these organizations, that this top 0.1%, that they're living very, very comfortably off this system, and that there are certain things that none of them will touch because it's benefiting them all.
The best example of that was the election of 2000. In no example that I can think of in my lifetime have I felt great. Wait, Gore won the election. Hello, America! Don't you see this? The emperor has no clothes. Wake up. And I'll never forget when I read Matt Drudge, of all people, reporting, and you can still find it online, that no matter when they counted the votes in Florida, no matter how you count it, Gore wins the election. Whether you count two chads, you don't count two chads. You count the dimples. There were 12 different ways they could count it, and all 12 says Gore wins. Now, that's something that's still not common knowledge. It's absolutely factual, and the reason it's not is the Miami Herald is the one that had the consortium of newspapers, New York Times, Washington Post. They all got together.
Right.
They all counted the votes. They used 12 different standards. All 12 standards, Gore won. But it happened after September 11th. And so they said, we have a country that is just been hit by a terrorist attack. We're all in mourning. This country can't handle the truth that we don't have a legitimate president. And so even though it's 100% factually true that Gore won the election in Florida, no matter how you count the votes, as long as you count all the votes, it's true, by the way, Bush wins if you only count some of the votes. But to be fair, Mickey Mouse wins if you only count some of the votes.
Right,
three
yeah.
people
I
voted,
win. You know, I might have a right in.
Three people voted for Mickey Mouse. But when you count all the votes under any system, everyone agrees. And look, people, I tell us Republicans, and they deny it. And I've made money betting them because all you have to do is look it up. It's obvious. I always say if you count all the votes. And they're like, yeah, but it says if you count some of the votes. No, if you count all. Anyway, that's a fact that is easily verifiable, is objectively true, and that 90% of Americans, heck, even most liberal Americans, don't know is true about something vital. The fact that the guy we elected didn't get to serve, and think of how 2008 would have been different under President Gore. It's mind-boggling. Our country would have been an entirely different place if it weren't for this coup d'etat. That's a fact that's inconvenient to the powers that be who say, you know what? Yeah, we got the wrong president, but we value stability, and the country's in mourning after September 11th, and this is just too, it may be true, but the truth is just too extreme for people to know about.
System.
Well, that's the greatest example I can think of.
Let me throw another one out there. A name that unfortunately most people don't know about. Tyler Drumheiler. Who is Tyler Drumheiler? To this day, when people discuss the Iraq War, whether or not there were weapons of mass destruction, and I hear people on both sides attack the intelligence community as though they got it wrong, they screwed it up, blah, blah, blah. When the fact of the matter is, and anyone listening to this show can go right now to YouTube, can Google it, Tyler Drumheiler went on 60 Minutes. He was the CIA chief for Europe. He went on 60 Minutes, and he said, we turned the equivalent of the Iraqi defense minister with the CIA. We looked into it. We talked to him, and he told us clearly. He gave us all the information we knew. There were no weapons of mass destruction. We were confident there were no weapons of mass destruction at the CIA. We went to the president. This guy said, we went, and then there in the room was Dick Cheney and all the blah, blah, blah. Walked up to him and said, look, this is the guy we turned. This is the info we got. There's no weapons of mass destruction. And he said he was expecting glee. He was expecting,
it's all in the National Intelligence Estimate of 2002. Right. Some of it's classified, some is not, but it's right there.
And he said they looked at him with a stony glare, a stony stare, and said, their answer, well, this is not about weapons of mass destruction. It's about regime change. So the fact of the matter is, to this day, find somewhere in the mainstream media, anywhere. Now, this guy was on 60 Minutes, and who knows, what happened after that. But you can go online and find the video of Tyler Drumheiler, a retired CIA leader, chief, whatever you want to call, bureau chief, saying they knew there were no weapons of mass destruction. I went in there. I looked them in the face, and I told them they were none.
Yeah, the closest you'll find is possibly in any kind of, again, that term mainstream media, it would be in Britain with the British press attacking.
The Guardian, the Telegraph.
Yeah, you know, attacking, you know, the complicit prime minister.
Don't they have a law? What's the law they have there about libel? A fairness law?
Yeah, they do.
They have like a fairness doctrine.
Yeah, they have it enshrined, and that was totally thrown out when, you know, we were trying in 2003 to marshal all of our quote allies unquote to do this, you know, basically, you know, a phony war, and you know that is so in Europe you have that the press covering that in Britain in particular. Mm-hmm. In particular. But I mean, but that's all gone away too. You will not find anything now in England about, nobody cares about that anymore, apparently.
Let me say that phony wars have their tradition in America.
Well,
remember the Maine. That was the ship that had a boiler accident in 1898 that caused the Spanish-American War. And then 1964, of course, the Gulf of Tonkin incident, completely made up to get us into war. So the governments have lied to get us into war lots of times before. But today we study the Maine in 1898 and the Gulf of Tonkin in 1964. Yeah. I do hope 10, 20 years from now, we're going to study the no weapons of mass destruction.
And I can attest to the fact that, you know, they do. They do at Georgetown and the School of Foreign Service. We look at that issue. I mean, and, you know, we might have a few diehard weirdos among the students, maybe their parents, who say, well, no, there were no weapons of mass destruction, et cetera, but for the, you know, in terms of the mainstream, people are looking at this now in historical context. How do we get into this groupthink sort of situation? I'll give you an example of groupthink right now. When the ACA decision, Obamacare decision, came down, and you had CNN and Fox essentially, what they say in the right stuff, screwing the pooch, you know, they messed it up. Now they messed it up for two entirely different reasons. Fox was set up because they knew somehow, maybe it was, you know, through conjecture or black ops, that somehow that Alito and Roberts and all their boys weren't going to let them down.
Right.
They were set up for this entire law to be struck down. CNN was set up to try to scoop social media.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what was wrong about both of them as dinosaurs basically fell apart. And they
Can I brag about this?
Yeah,
they
misperceived.
Quick brag. I was the first, David Schuster and I were the first journalists on broadcast media to accurately report that decision.
Yeah, well, congratulations.
We did it before CNN or Fox.
Well, you're listening to, this is News Views on every Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. I'm here with, Mark Levine and our esteemed guest, Professor Chris Chambers. He's an attorney and he's also a professor of journalism and a journalist himself, from Georgetown University. You're listening to 89.3 FM WPFW here in Washington, D.C. Let me give out the number. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back. The number is 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. Call in. Be a part of News Views. We'll be right back.
What are you doing for the inauguration weekend? We've got the perfect event for you. Hi, I'm Tiffany Jordan, Development Director of WPFW, inviting you to join us for an inaugural celebration at the Peace Ball, Voices of Hope and Resistance, on January 20th at Arena Stage in the beautiful Meade Center for American Theater. This historic event is co-hosted by Bus Boys and Poets, Pacifica Foundation, Democracy Now!, The Nation, Trans Africa, and other peace and human justice activists. We will come together to rejoice in our victories and acknowledge the work that lies ahead. There will be renowned speakers and artists like Alice Walker, Van Jones, Julian Bond, Marion Wright Edelman, Eton Thomas, Reverend Lennox Yearwood, and more. Don't miss your chance to be a part of the inaugural activities during this special weekend, which includes surprise guest entertainers, food, drink, and dancing. The event starts at 7 p.m. and tickets are $200 apiece. Give a tax-deductible year-end donation to attend this momentous occasion. To purchase tickets, visit WPFW.org. See you all at the Peace Ball on Sunday, January 20th.
Welcome back to News Views. My name's Garland Nixon, right here at 89.3 FM WPFW. I'm here with Mark Levine and Chris Chambers, and we're talking about news. We're on every Friday. I almost forgot what day we were on. Friday. You know, all these holidays.
Still at 5 for the moment.
Yeah.
It's like a 4-day Saturday, basically.
Yeah, I don't know what day of the week it is. I know what Sunday night is, though.
Yeah, right.
Dallas Cowboys
night.
That's
right.
That's important. That's the night I'm concerned with this week. But at any rate, we've got Victor on the line coming up. Is Victor?
We're getting him, I guess.
We got Victor on line? Line one, Victor. Welcome to News Views.
Hello, how's it going?
Just wonderful, wonderful. Thanks for calling.
Yes, sir. I'm actually a first-time caller, first-time listener to the radio. I was just flipping through the channels. I got your station. And I got to say, man, I agree with a lot of what you said. In fact, I kind of preach it to a lot of friends and such. One thing I want to get at, you were saying a little bit earlier about how, like, the rich people, the top percent or whatever, how they're sitting on a system comfortably high up there. Man, the system's control. You know, you guys are talking about the news media and all the stuff that they're doing. It's all control, man.
Thanks, Victor. Well, yeah, you know, to some extent, I mean, and I'm not one to, you know, to say that necessarily that there's some, you know, there's some, you know, tiny cabal. I'm not, you know, at the top, but I do agree that the people with a lot of money, the top 1%, do work to manipulate the various factors in our society, particularly such as the media, to help them to be able to continue to be part of the top 0.0001% and to further their, you know, nefarious goals.
Again, the word media is plural, so mm-hmm. there's lots of media out there. But are some people in the media extremely powerful trying to manipulate stuff? Well, again, what was it, Roger Ailes that tried to get General Petraeus as president of the United States and
right,
was willing to
right.
pay for his campaign? I mean, you know, yes, there are people at the top trying to manipulate the thing. Again, they're not a cabal suggests they're all working together.
Right, right.
I don't know that there are. There may be 5 or 6 working differently.
Yeah, right.
But it is true that a very small group of people have a lot of power in the media.
Chris, what do you think about the whole big conspiracy thing in a broad sense or in a narrow sense?
Well, I mean, it goes back to what I said before. In a broad sense, it does sort of exist, again, because you've got 5 companies that all go to the same trough for their funding. Mm-hmm. Their directors are all interrelated with the banks, with the Wall Street hedge funds. I mean, that's where they get their money from. But, you know, in a specific sense, no, I wouldn't, you know, you know, Mark's right. I mean, cabal implies that there's really a small group of wizards kind of manipulating stuff. But, I mean, it does occur. I mean, even in kind of dumb stories where you have, you don't want to have a dialogue on race, let's just say. So the same news outlets will take, say, an AP feed about what Spike Lee says about Django Unchained, and that'll become a mainstream news thought all throughout different, you know, from blogs to online magazines to the major networks, and then they'll just churn that around, but nobody will talk about race.
That's a really good point, just about the Associated Press, and I generally think they do good work, but I don't think most people realize that what you're reading in the Louisville Courant and the Denver Gazette
and the
Tampa Times, whatever it's called,
right.
really are the exact same news from the AP.
Yeah.
They're not, and so people may think, well, everyone's saying this. Well, no, one person said it at the AP, and everybody copied it, and that's not even a knock on the AP, but it just shows how a few sources can be ubiquitous.
Exactly.
Next, we've got Ingrid. Ingrid, welcome to News Views on WPFW.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for listening. I hope you're a regular listener every
well,
Friday from now on.
I am, but I just got home, and I apologize if you already talked about this, but there's currently another method that is used is to repeat a falsehood often enough until people believe it.
Mm-hmm.
That's
true. And what they're talking about now all the time is Iran and demonizing them and saying that they have threatened to destroy Israel. And they actually haven't. But people keep repeating this. Earlier this year in April, I don't know if you saw this, there was an interview on Al Jazeera, and Dan Meridor, who's the Israeli director of intelligence, admitted to the interviewer that Iran has never threatened that. What they keep referring to was a speech that Ahmadinejad made in which he was actually referring back to another speech by one of the Ayatollahs who had said the Soviet Union as a political entity had ceased to exist. and that he hoped that that in the future Israel would also cease to exist as a political entity. There's no mention of bombing, and people keep repeating this. They've threatened to destroy Israel. Even the president, I'm sorry to say, in the third debate, he and Romney brought this up. They accused Iran of wanting to destroy Israel. And they do other things, too, like William Bennett, the former drug czar, was on CNN a little while ago. Right at the end, he said, well, the Iranians have said that if they got nuclear weapons, they were going to use them.
Well,
this is the opposite of what they've said. He might not believe them, but what they actually said is that any nuclear weapon is against their religion.
Well, thank you very much, and we certainly appreciate your calling. And what she's saying, the broad sense of what she's saying is very important, and that is that in many instances, what we in the media, and I've often said this, someone on some media channel will come up with a premise about something. It may be about the budget, it may be about the, you know, weapons of mass destruction, whatever it may be. Someone will come up with a premise, and rather than question the premise, whatever it may be, people will start repeating the premise, and it goes over whatever the issue may be. There may be instances where they're valid, there may be instances where they're invalid, but one of the things we see in the media is somebody coming up with a premise, and then everybody, in my opinion, it's almost like they're being lazy, just says, oh yeah, you know, whether it's the term fiscal cliff, which is not a very accurate metaphor, but everybody says, well, that really works, I'll go with that.
Well, Garland, I mean, lazy is easy, lazy is cheap. You have to, again, understand this is a business model now. They have cut back on, you know, people overseas doing investigative work. I mean, if you can boil something down to a premise and a lazy tagline, mm-hmm. and just bring in pundits to argue about it, maybe do a little bit of reporting from the Pentagon or the State Department with some superficial nonsense. I mean, you know, you've put on a major news show on a shoestring, and that's what they want. They want to make the money, but they don't want to spend it to find the truth. So laziness is part of the business model, unfortunately. So that's why these gossip items or mistruths or mm-hmm. half-truths become news. That's what you could, that's the lesson you can pull
from. Isn't that how the Iraq War happened? Isn't that basically how it happened?
Well, except the government was telling us that. I would just say with regard to Iran that I do think it's true that Iran has never said that they will nuke Israel, but I think it's also true, I personally don't believe the protestations because they're arming Hezbollah to the teeth, and Hezbollah says they do want to destroy Israel. So sometimes, particularly when you have a government like Iran, where you've got an Ayatollah who's really in charge and a president who's the figurehead who's not in charge, people say all kinds of things.
But I think we don't want to necessarily get away, you know, get kind of drawn off course with
is that falsehoods do get repeated in the media, and weapons of mass destruction is the clearest example.
But let's take what Mark says. A real news organization would have people on the ground there to do the investigative work, to talk to the real experts here and in the Middle East, to find out really who's in charge there, to find out what's blowing off steam and what's a lot of crap,
right.
Basically.
Bluster, right.
And what's real. But they don't have that. And that's part of the business model now, is that, you know, you don't want to dig too deep. That's cost too much. You want to be able to churn this stuff for 24 hours, bring pundits in, get more eyeballs watching, get more clicks on the site, and you know, getting that subtext, you know, if you have a trade magazine that might be able to do that, but even then, they're not paying attention to it.
Okay, next we have online, we have Leon, I believe. Leroy, welcome to WPFW.
Yeah, thank you. I had a question, and I'm sure you guys can answer it. I just always wondered why, after Desert Storm, they left Saddam Hussein in charge. I mean, it was like if we won World War II, leaving Hitler in charge of Germany. I never did understand that, or why nobody even complained or questioned about it.
Well, thank you, Leroy. Well, you know, we don't necessarily have the answer to that, and I certainly appreciate the call.
They left Saddam Hussein in charge. But anyway.
But we don't want to.
The
important thing is, you know, we hate to get too far away from our subject is the media. Right. We want people
to call. Give out the phone number, right?
202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. And next we have Steve. Welcome to WPFW.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question and a comment. I heard you talking about false wars. What about the Panamanian War? Our government puts a big stress on the war on drugs, but I never hear anything about, you know, what our government did. They actually sold drugs to fund wars, and I don't hear anybody talking about that. I just wonder if you can comment on that.
We have a history of propping up dictators and then taking them out when they don't serve our interests. Panama's one of them. The Philippines is another one of them.
I mean, that, yeah,
Egypt, frankly, is another one of them.
We supported Saddam Hussein.
We supported
Iran in 1953. You could go on and on.
Exactly. We support a lot of Central American dictators. I mean, all of that's in the history books you probably teach about it in Georgia.
Well, yeah, we try to put in a communications and media, you know, angle on, you know, we're pretty much multidisciplinary, everything from economics to history. And, yeah, I mean, that's a perfect example. And that segues into stuff that is not covered, the drug war and some of the mistakes or actual nefarious things that we did, including manufacturing this war against the Panamanian dictator.
Was that his name?
Manuel Noriega.
Noriega.
Torrijos was another dictator. Yeah, sorry, I'm confusing
so
my
many dictators.
You're
so
right,
many,
it was Noriega.
Yeah, we've supported so many dictators. We'd be here all day talking about
that. Yeah, but this is an example of how history is not reported accurately, and then you have history spilling over into current events, a drug war domestically and a drug war overseas that has a very shady and just mind-bogglingly stupid elements to it. So I mean, you know, and that's not covered by the media at all.
And what's interesting with it when we talk about the drug war with the marijuana, the issue of the marijuana laws, what we see covered is what's going on and what's happening. We don't get the investigative journalism into the what's and whys and why it should or shouldn't happen. You know, it's funny that when we use the term investigative journalism, I always think back to the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
There's not much anymore. Jack Anderson. Yeah. I mean, other than 60 Minutes, which is getting a little tamer. I love Adele. I love Adele, but you know that's what 60 Minutes is focusing on, rather than government
Justin
corruption.
Yeah, right.
You know, there isn't much today. Listen, I mean, you're right, Chris. The investigative journalism costs money.
Yeah.
And sending reporters undercover or in Afghanistan or in some risky way, the reporter that just got almost killed in Syria.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's dangerous and it's expensive, and it's a lot easier just to talk to Adele, who's a lovely person.
They don't do it here. But we've got James. James, welcome to WPFW News Views.
Yeah, I just heard a little bit of the same sort of news manipulation from one of the gentlemen saying, oh, yeah, well, you know, I don't doubt that Iraq might bomb Israel. Well, you know, why is it that all of the invading countries, all over the history, everybody always says it's terrible for the invaded people to react, you know, violently? That's from the American Indians to the Irish fighting off the British.
Not to interrupt you, James, but that's one of the things I'm trying to kind of hold the rudder steady here, because we are talking about the media, and as I'm sure you know, as a regular talk radio listener, it's so easy to drift off into other subjects.
Right.
So
particular gentleman who was saying with so absolute horror and so terrible that they might do it is kind of the same kind of media swing where they, you know, you're saying make it an unthinkable idea that somebody would want to, you know, kill off invaders.
Thank you. Man. Well, now here's the other part about the media. I don't think any of us are saying that there's anything wrong with people who are on the air editorializing and giving their opinions, as long as it's clear, such as here, we're three people sitting around a table editorializing. This is our opinions, and we make it clear. We are not sitting here saying today's news from, you know, gigantic news cable radio station. But the problem, I think, is we have people now who speak in the context of a news reporter when the fact of the matter is it's editorializing and punditry.
I
agree with you. What I'm saying is that one of the things that happens is that then it becomes the norm or the standard attitude for everybody, and that's what I was sort of hearing. I'll let somebody else talk.
Well, thank you very much.
I try whenever I give my opinion to base it on some kind of fact. You can disagree. You can say you challenge my fact, or you can say that you disagree with my conclusion from my fact. But I really feel that the difference between a pure opinion or pure pundit and a journalist or a pundit journalist is you say, here are the facts, and this is why I believe what I believe. And that, I think, is – and then at least you know where I'm coming from. I'm not just saying, this is some knee-jerk whatever. whatever, you know, Obama's a Kenyan socialist Muslim, you know, based on no facts. Just because I think it's true because he's got this anti-imperial. Okay, that's just a lot of BS.
Well, then,
The heart of it, I think, is to name your facts, name your assumptions, then give your opinion.
Yeah, I mean, that happens all the time. I mean, on Fox, you have people who are political operatives, but come on as pundits, and nobody, you know, mm-hmm. discloses.
Karl Rove, anybody?
Yeah, Karl, not, you know, everybody from, you know, just who are on the payroll.
Right.
You know, or working, say, for Breitbart or Real Clear Politics, and then are on the Fox payroll, too. There's no disclosure there. You get news sources, say, from the NRA or, say, from Big Oil. They'll just take their video news releases and their press releases and turn them into news reports. And then the pundits will chew on that. I mean, there's no disclosure as what's going on
there.
Yeah,
that's what I was getting at.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
I think it's unethical. Quite frankly,
my bias is clear. I'm a liberal. I'm a progressive. I used to work for the Democrats in the House. I let people know exactly what my bias is, and then if you disagree with me, fine. You know,
it's like fair and balanced. As long as you don't have to be balanced, as long as you're fair.
Exactly.
Right.
You have to be fair.
Know where you're coming from. We're about to go to a caller, but I certainly recall after the beginning of the Iraq War, one of the things that was found out was that on Fox News there were a number of generals, former generals, that were on.
That's
coming
a perfect
on.
Example.
And everyone thought, they're just bringing on former general or so-and-so. He's an expert.
Yeah.
And they found out that they were actually on the payroll.
Yeah.
They brought him on as though, this guy is an expert because he's a general.
Think
and they
tank
found
experts
out,
or something. Yeah,
that
yeah, it was
they're
totally
paying
phony.
People. And not only that the Bush administration was putting these people in Black Hawk helicopters and traipsing them around the various places in Iraq to show them what they wanted to show them. These people were assisting the news network to get access because of their expertise and connections as a general. They were getting them access, and they were able to put forth a picture that they wanted to show. Mark, we're going to go to a caller in a second.
Just real quick,
Mark.
Maggie Gallagher, Armstrong Williams, both paid for their opinion without disclosing the payment. And to some extent, Judith Miller from the New York Times, also tricked by the government, didn't disclose it.
And we've got our caller is Michelle. Welcome to WPFW. Thanks for calling.
Good evening. How are you all doing?
Hi,
wonderful.
Michelle.
Great.
Yeah, I find it interesting that you all are talking about the media. I know you all raised the term. The media and news, but the problem that we have, or that some of us have, or I have, is that you're not giving us news. Okay, now I'm identifying all of you all as part of the media, because you all have... You have a platform right now, and you're on the air.
We're part of the media.
Yes, I'll
accept that.
No problem.
Right. Okay, good.
Guilty as charged.
I want you to take it in the spirit in which it's offered.
But
my criticism is that the reason why Walter Cronkite was so revered, because he was of a brand of the media, and it was a different time frame, where they were, they had the platform and the forum that enabled them to actually report the news, even if it wasn't. What was viewed as the most supportive of the incoming of the existing administration, even if it didn't support the lies that the government wanted to put forward, because what people are looking for is information. Now, obviously, everybody's not looking for it, but the reality is that the whole idea of the media, the whole idea of the Fourth Estate, is that they were there to help us. So that we wouldn't be afraid of our government, but that our government would be afraid of us. And what I fault the many of the practitioners in the media nowadays with either having forgotten that or having bailed, because it's not comfortable. It forces you to put yourself in jeopardy. So you're not really reporting the news. You're just doing a job in another big business that is there to help sell crap to the people.
Thank you. Thank you. Excellent call. Certainly appreciate your opinion. Something else.
And in defense of us, now we're talking about the media, but certainly you and I, Garland, have done a number of shows on, for example, giving details on the guns used in the massacre in Newtown just we did last week. So, you know, I mean, we certainly we don't just comment on the commentary. We actually can.
And I think it's important because I consider this part of the media. But one of the things we're doing is what any human being should do. We should at times question ourselves and think about the way we think. And I think that's what we're doing right now.
Oh, of course. I mean, you know, she's right. I mean, it was a different time, you know, say in the 50s and 60s. I mean, yes, there were platforms and agendas, but I mean, technology has changed all that, has turned it all on its ear. Technology and corporate structure, when those are the two things that have affected the media, we want to use that term, the most in the last 25 years. It's technology mm-hmm. and the corporate structure. You take those elements out of that, you know, it's a totally different beast. And I think the technology has had some problems, but it's also made the media, whatever you want to call it, I think better in certain circumstances. The corporate structure, however, has not had any positive results that I can see, speaking as an academic and a practitioner. I don't see anything positive about that. The technology, however, people can reasonably debate pro and con, whether it's been good or bad. And I've seen both sides mm-hmm. of the debate, and that's a really good debate. The corporate structure, there is no way that has been positive for the media.
Okay. We've got Paul. Paul, welcome to WPFW.
Hi. Just wanted to make a comment about, the term media, because for some reason, whenever that term comes up, probably other people too think about the corporate media or the network media. And, I mean, wouldn't media really include all that's available that gives news, including you guys, mm-hmm. Amy Goodman, you know, all the great shows on the internet, you know, the Real News Network, mm-hmm. Young Turks, whatever.
Yep.
But for some reason, we've been kind of brainwashed to think the media is the corporate media or the mainstream media, whatever that means. And, you know, it's definitely propaganda, clearly.
Thank you.
Maybe if we broaden our understanding or our definition of what the media is or can be, then, you know, we can move forward a little better.
Thank you. Professor Chambers at the beginning of the show actually made a great comment about that. And what he was getting at was this. To some extent, the media is what you see it as. You know, now seeing the media as I view it, I go online, I go to various online websites, I go to websites, I go to various newspapers around the world, small news. So I dig through, I have to sort through this whole mess of falsities and propaganda until I can start finding some story that looks like it has some teeth. And then I have to dig through for some consistency to find out if there are a number of legitimate places that I can source it before I can walk away and say, you know, that one there, I think might have a little teeth to it. So to some extent, the media, don't we have to kind of build our own media?
Yeah, you have to work, and then you have to work at it. I mean, the one thing that Cronkite had in his favor, and one thing that, say, William Raspberry, you know, some of the great, you know, minority journalists, broadcasters had in their favor, was that they didn't have that technology out there that they had to dig through.
Mm-hmm.
You have a situation now where even the people providing the hardware, you know, either the networks like Comcast mm-hmm. or, say, AT&T, Verizon, or even Apple. The
people, or even Google.
Google, yeah.
It's hiding stuff from you in the searches.
Yeah, the people providing the systems and even the machines, especially the handheld universe,
right,
are trying to get into this act as well and provide their own content. It's not entertainment or news. It's content. It's product. So, you know, they didn't have to deal with that. We do. And, you know, and that takes, you know, intelligence and diligence and discipline. And that's something that, you know, we really don't have anymore. Maybe it's because of the technology, maybe not, but you need to work at this.
I agree with the caller that we are the media. I would argue, I'd agree with the caller that we are not the mainstream media. The three of us, Pacific, I don't think is the mainstream media. We're not the corporate media, but we are media. And that's partly, and Pacific actually began this way earlier in the 1960s. It's taken many years for the rest to catch up. But with all the nonsense and bloggers and so forth, I think in some ways we have to salute the democratizing of the media. Because today, with Twitter, with Facebook, and yes, it's easier for falsehoods to get out there, it's easier for people to misuse it, but it's also easier for real stories to get out from real people. I remember when the terrorist attack in India, and it was mm-hmm. a tweet, was the first news of that attack, because it was somebody in the hotel.
Yeah.
The Mumbai massacre. So the my point is that I actually think, despite all the real problems that the professor and I both recognize, that there is something to be said for the fact that ordinary people can get the word out now, much more, frankly, than they could in the Cronkite era.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
I believe we've got Matt. Welcome to WPFW. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks. Do you think the media was slanted in its reporting of the debate with Obama and Romney, like in the first debate? They all the mistakes. Facts that Romney had wrong. I feel if Obama had done that, it would have been played up, but it seems like it was washed out with Romney. They said he won the debate.
You know, it's funny about that debate. When I saw the debate, I thought Obama won. And then I saw all the incredible, everyone that disagreed with me. And I'm like, well, I guess Romney won. I mean, there definitely was a media groupthink where a bunch of people come together and you hear everyone else say something. And suddenly that becomes the accepted wisdom. I thought Obama did better. But yeah, he did seem a little sleepy now that I think about it.
It's a horse. They make it into a horse race, you know.
Let me throw the other part of that, about that, Chris, was and that was where there was a premise then, and that there was a certain amount of groupthink, and that was that the immediate discussion, the immediate aftermath, it was pretty broadly believed that Romney won, which, if you look at it as a boxing match, he won. But what wasn't really discussed was the way the guy won was by just completely lying at everything he said.
Obama didn't counteract him on his lies was considered a win for Romney, which is why, Chris, when you mentioned fact-checkers, I love me some fact-checkers. I think when Candy Crowley told Romney off, that made my night.
Well, that's a metaphor or allegory, whatever English class from high school term you want to use, for what we're talking about. The substance of this was not examined. Mitt Romney either lied on some circumstances, or he basically backtracked from the positions that his supporters wanted him to take.
Right.
You know, I mean, so it's almost like, you know, if you're pro-slavery before the Civil War, you get up with a debate with Abraham Lincoln. You say, well, you know what? I hate slavery, too. I've always been against it.
And Governor George Wallace of Alabama, exact example.
Exactly. And nobody and his supporters and the right-wing press, if you want to call it, were hailing this as a great victory. But they were hailing it as a great victory of style over substance.
Right.
The stuff that he was saying was counter to what the positions were that they wanted him to take. But they didn't care about that, and that didn't make good TV.
And ultimately, you know, doesn't it kind of reflect the media? Style over substance.
Yep.
You are concerned with style and you're not overly concerned with substance, you know, has our, quote, news become simply a product to keep our mind occupied between advertisements?
It's a business, and they got to sell.
We've got one more caller. We're going to have to go. But Marvin, unfortunately, we only got 30 seconds to give you, but let us know what. Thank you for coming to PFW. Let us know what you have to say.
How you doing?
Great. Hey, go ahead, Marvin.
Hey, man, Mr. Program on Tuesday night, man. Hey, man.
Thanks.
That you're still there on Friday night.
Thank you.
Hey, the thing I want to talk about is as far as the trust that, I mean, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, the American people are so disarraying right now. Mm-hmm. Because of the corrupt politics we have in Washington right now. And, you know, they don't know who to trust right now. You know, you said that the Republican Party is to the right, but the Democratic Party is the left, toward the center. I mean, we have serious issues in this country, and they're playing games with people's lives right now as far as these fiscal cuts, as far as security, Medicare. I mean, people are dependent on this in this country right now, man, you know. So the thing about it is this. I mean, who can we trust?
Thank you very much. Sorry to cut you off. I hope you call back next week, but we're running right out of time. So call back early next week. We'll give you a little bit more time. Thank you. Appreciate your call. And you're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C. My name's Garland Nixon. I'm here with
Mark Levine.
And
Professor
Chris Chambers. And we're talking about issues regarding the media. Mark, if someone wants to get in touch with you, how can they get in touch?
Go to my website, marklevinetalk.com, or my fan page on Facebook. And on my website, I try to post at each of these shows every week. So if you missed part of today's show, you should be able to see that on that website.
That's Mark Levine.
What Talk. Is it? TALK. MarkLevineTalk.com.
Okay, great. MarkLevineTalk.com. And within a few days, you should be able to get this show. Chris, if somebody wants to get in touch with you,
just go on the Hoya website in between basketball games, www.georgetown.edu. Look me up in the directory, and I will find you.
That's Professor Christopher Chambers, and my name is Garland Nixon. Thank you.
You're listening to WPFW, the messenger. Hi, I'm Mark Torres, senior producer at the Pacifica Radio Archives, and welcome to From the Vault, our weekly series that takes our history out of the oldest and largest collection of public radio programming in the United States and puts it back onto the radio. On this week's From the Vault, we salute the life and work of the great American playwright, author, actor, and commentator, Gore Vidal. Born on October 3, 1925, he died July 31, 2012. Gore Vidal had a unique world perspective that is preserved in the Pacifica Radio Archives from his talk on the American novel.